Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. I am thrilled to have you here with us. We're going to give this a few seconds to get started. Maybe more than a few seconds. Here we go. 15 people here. Great. Everybody's joining. It's awesome. It's a Friday. We're talking about something really important today around sustainability as a data challenge. So I'm really psyched that you are here to join us. Thank you for reaching back and coming back after we took the week off for July 4th here in the United States. I did absolutely nothing on July 4th. Very happy for that. It's been just a very stressful few months for me, and I don't see that ending anytime soon. This is one of my stress reliefs, is to meet all of you here and get all the great wisdom and interest from everybody here around what we're talking about. Today, we're talking about sustainability. We have some very interesting topics coming up in the next few weeks. And great to see who's here. Rachel, welcome. Srinivas, good to see you again. Hi, Tony, good to see you again. Thank you for saying hello on the chat channel. Please do say hello. Hello, Herman. It's great to see you from California, Melbourne, Florida. Do say hello. This is a critical topic that we'll be talking about sustainability today. And there are no wrong answers. I guess doing nothing is a wrong answer. Here comes Sophia. This is awesome. There are no wrong answers about this. And let me just see. We have a special new guest joining today. Hello, Sophia. Can you hear us? You'll have to go off mute.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Sophia. I'm glad you joined us. We're just getting started. A few seconds to let everybody join. Hello, David. Hello, Steve. Thank you for joining this week. Today, we're talking about a very special topic, Shaping Tomorrow, Sustainability as a Data Challenge. And I did not come up with this title. As you know, I try to get my experts, including all of you, to come back to me and say, Isaac, this is what we really should talk about. I met Sophia at SAP Sapphire, it was about 2 months ago. And we started talking about sustainability. And I said, you know what? Every time I've talked about sustainability here at the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers, it's been us, the regular group, Joanne, Derek, Heather, John, Joe, Liz, Martin, myself, all of us talking about the things that we're trying to do, its importance, different ways to squeak value and improve our sustainability objectives or address our sustainability objectives. And I said, if I'm going to cover this again, I want somebody who is an expert. Sophia is the Chief Sustainability Officer at SAP. And Sophia, I'm so glad you're here. Maybe tell us a little bit about your role and then I'll introduce our first question.
Well, first of all, thank you to you for having me. Thank you to everyone listening for being interested in SAP's work on sustainability. Fundamentally, what we are doing here is making sure that we are building the ERP of tomorrow, that we are using the information, the content, and the value locked up in an ERP, locked up in a material master, and surfacing it for the problems we see the market needing to solve today, a chunk of which come under the umbrella of the term sustainability.
Thank you, Sophia. So here's my first question. I thought we'd start out with just like doing some level setting because, you know, there's been a sort of a speed bump in the road. Can I just call
sure.
it that without going any more details about how companies are pursuing their ESG goals over the last, 8 months or so. and so I feel like, you know, just talking about where are the win-wins for organizations? How can we improve environmental outcomes while also hitting our other corporate objectives, whether it's reducing costs or enhancing brand value or just operational efficiencies? You have like a really good purview of that at SAP. So I'm going to give you the first crack and then we're going to go around the group and seeing how do we make sustainability goals a win-win for organizations.
Right. Well, I mean, boom, let's get into it. Real talk here, right?
Yep.
So the first thing I would say is I would question if we're trying to improve environmental outcomes. And I would say an environmental charity or a local conservation group is trying to improve environmental outcomes. What we are doing here is making sure that the end users who interact with an ERP system on a day-to-day basis have the ability to A, create, B, surface, and C, contextualize the data points they need to respond to environmental related, one, regulation, two, risk, and three, opportunity. So that could be as simple as, ha ha ha, that's a joke to anyone who has to do this, as simple as a complex regulatory report, the ability to predict the cost of a product after it's affected by the cost of carbon, and the ability to design through R&D, procure through supply chain, and sell a green premium. I would also say for the conversation before we kick it off to others and I pass the mic, the definition of sustainability versus the definition of ESG. So commonly conflated in the press headlines we meet. ESG or environmental social governance is a capital markets construct. That means it's for investors. Investors want more data to evaluate future financial performance. And they've used this term, originally out of University of Chicago, to categorize that type of information. The action of sustainability, the process capabilities of ERP-centric sustainability, create regulatory compliance, minimize risk, and look for other product or SKU level values that, in the meantime, throw off data that can be put into an investor's ESG model. And with those scopes and definitions, I'll hand the mic to the next speaker.
Well, before I let you go, Sophia, on this question, you must have at least one shining example of a company doing this, right, or at least very well. Can you share one with us?
Oh, of course. And I never hesitate to take the mic. I just don't want to hog. So we all know the famous examples. We all know Patagonia, right? We all know Ben and Jerry. So let's take the small guys, right? Let's take the ones you never heard of. There's a winemaker, Gonzalez Bias. Who doesn't like wine, right? This is a pretty friendly example. I mean, there might be people who don't like wine, and I won't hold that against them.
I love wine.
There you
Everybody
go.
knows
All right.
that.
Isaac, you're my audience for this one, right? They need to create allergic. Okay. They need to produce and sell into market a lovable product that also complies with multiple different local packaging and plastic regulation and bring down cost at the same time. So they set what is on its surface, yes, of course, an environmental goal that reduces plastic consumption and in tree consumption through packaging, but in the double click is actually a very actionable cost goal to spend less money on packaging because you don't drink packaging. You drink wine, right? Or let's take someone back in the supply chain, a Martor foam pack, a Turkish company you might not have heard of on a day-to-day basis, but who sells to a heck of a lot of car brands that you do hear about and touch and see on a day-to-day basis. What they wanted to do is go all the way upstream in their design, understand exactly the embedded energy in each of their designs, i.e. carbon, and then be able to translate that to their consumer or end user, i.e. the car manufacturer or the consumer of the door or the car seat, and show them how you could get the same awesome design visually and know that one design versus another had lower carbon emissions without deteriorating look or performance. And as you can see, Isaac, more than one to share, but I see a hand, so I'll pause there.
No, those are perfect. What we really like here at the Coffee Hour are pragmatic examples, ones that we feel like we can reach. In fact, Martin had suggested that as a theme here, is that we just try to keep things as pragmatic as we can. We got a lot of really good listeners here around that. I'm going to hand the mic to Joanne. Joanne, I know you only have a brief amount of time with us today. Highly unusual. For those who don't know, 154 episodes, Joanne has been on every single one of them. Joanne, answer our question about win-win sustainability goals, but also, you know, chime in on sustainability as a data challenge, unless in case we don't get to you next.
Sure. Well, sustainability as a data challenge means looking at every single system and the ramifications of the data that's in them in order to draw in many cases, using knowledge graphs is a very good way to do it, what the emissions, carbon emissions could be. My example is companies that look to improve their product quality to reduce the amount of waste and rework that goes into the manufacturer. So things don't end up in landfills, but also on the rework side, if your rework literally means make it again, in other words, take something that might be not the right product quality for shipping to a customer and remanufacture it in a way that it now meets the standard. But what that does is it doubles the amount of power that's used, as one example, or materials, human labor as well, and it all translates into a higher cost in emissions that are created from the remanufacture of something already made once. So that's a triple win, because you're driving down lower emissions and lower carbon, you're driving down the use of equipment and the use of power, you're driving down the improvement of product quality, which also creates a win for brand value, for customer satisfaction, for product value. You can play that any which way you want. So waste and rework are two huge ones in manufacturing. One of the examples that I would use is there's a particular furniture manufacturer that now is much more concerned with how they cut the foam that goes into the cushions or the parts of a couch to not waste nearly as much just by changing the parameter on which they use to manage and measure the cuts of the foam. So they're saving the environment by putting less filler kind of plastics into the air, into the land, into the water. And what they're also doing as part of that is when they start recutting those cushions, they're using less water. So they have less wastewater to get rid of as well. They're lowering their cost of goods, and they're passing that along in terms of reforestation projects that they've taken on to be socially responsible. So that's my pragmatic example.
Joanna, love it. We got a bunch of hands raised. I'm going to go to Martin next. Martin, how do we make this really pragmatic, our ability to address sustainability within our operations? Go ahead, Martin.
Well, I think the pragmatic side here, and I think Sophia is very correct. There's not that many companies that are doing it for their own reasons to actually be purely sustainable. Most of it is commercial in one form or another. And if you look at it, the majority is reducing waste, reducing energy usage and things like this. Most of those translate to the bottom line is if you're not actually spending the money or you're wasting less, then you're more efficient. So there's actually some really good pragmatic reasons for companies to do this stuff. And to give you an actual example, one of the companies I've worked for in the past does a lot of tissue manufacturing. And there's all this argument about reusable wood fibers and other things like that turning into toilet tissue and things like this. Well, this company had its kind of started right from the trees, and they owned a lot of land, they managed a lot of land, etc. And so they had right from back in the 1950s, before it was fashionable, the kind of ownership here had a very visionary view of planting three trees for every one they harvest. And going back about 7 or 8 years ago, they hit 1 billion trees planted. So just in terms of an actual kind of, well, my raw material is this, I'm using it, therefore, how do I supplement that? But it's also very good for the environment and everything else. So it's just kind of how you look at some of these things in terms of a business viewpoint, in terms of, how do you reduce waste? How do you actually improve things, et cetera, et cetera.
Martin, I want to use your story to plug a book here that I read a few months ago. It's called How Things Are Made: A Journey Through the Hidden World of Manufacturing. It's by Tim Minchell, and his opening example is around all the entire supply chain of building of manufacturing toilet paper, and all the nuances around it. He has an entire section just on re-engineering manufacturing towards sustainability. So it's just a good reminder. And so for those of you working in manufacturing, some of it will be sort of 101 for you, but it's just a fantastic read. Good story
No,
and really
I'm just
covers
going to add to that, Isaac, that in
it. Yeah.
terms of, we talk about kind of, recycled paper and things like that. The actual amount of energy goes into doing recycled paper is massively more than some of the harvesting from the tree perspective. And hence, you're actually a false saving in some ways if you look at the total sustainability and the total picture of energy consumption and things like this. So it's kind of an interesting balance when you look at things like toilet paper and recycled paper.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Martin. Hi, Derek.
Good morning. How's it going?
Going well. What is your sustainability win-win story? Let's hear that, and then we'll go to Joe after that.
Yeah, so I've always equated sustainability with resilience. And when you look at businesses and the way they're operating, so one of the things that a lot of companies back in the day, even some today, they still have data centers they pretend maintain on-prem. And that becomes a problem because of the carbon footprint that they take up. So I strongly help them or recommend that they migrate to virtualization, cloud migration, using cloud-based services to reduce the carbon footprint, but also the amount of physical hardware they have to maintain. This is also going to lower costs and emissions going across the board. And it's really going to help them when it comes to things like disaster recovery and business continuity for failover. But another thing I was recommending with companies, a lot of companies, when they have these business computers, a lot of them would pay companies to come e-cycle them. And I started recommending years ago, I said, why don't you take some of these computers, refurbish them, and sell them to the employees? Because some of these employees have kids, and a lot of these kids need computers to work on, and they get it for, a large, smaller percentage than what they could buy new. And they like that because what they would do then is take the money they would get from those computers and put it back into either cybersecurity services or IT department. So it became a win-win from looking at how can I take what I'm already using? It's already exhausted the business use, wipe it clean, and now use it for somebody else that can actually benefit, like a kid. So these are kind of things I'm working with. And then also looking at things like supply chain monitoring and management, the more data that we can extract from those services and things that we're working with to make better decisions, it helps to really help us maintain that viability of those systems and sustain them across the board. So again, I look at it from a resilience perspective. How can we maintain the sustainability, the business resilience, the business sustainability of the services by making small decisions and tweaks to help make them be more efficient?
Thank you, Derek. Recycle your computers and move into more efficient data centers, i.e., clouds. For most companies that cannot do this well, it's easy, not an easy, but an important win-win. Joe, are you going to talk to me about concrete?
No, actually, I want to separate the discussion into two parts here. There's the manufacturing side, which we've been talking about, and the non-manufacturing side, which is, I think, more of a challenge. On the manufacturing side, we've heard a lot about, energy conservation, Companies I've worked for monitored and tried to limit water use and wastewater. They were very environmentally conscious. In fact, in the supply chain for one company, we would look for raw materials that were stamped with the seal of approval of sustainability. In other words, forestry products that derived from forests where they committed to replanting trees after cutting them down. Sophia probably knows the organization. The acronym escapes me at the moment. On the non-manufacturing side, though, it's more of a challenge. And I think I just heard Derek bring up recycling. I was going to talk about a program that I launched where at one company, computers would get cycled out after 3 or 4 years of use. You could donate them, as was suggested, or you could make sure that they went through a reputable recycling process where the precious metals are recovered, the plastics are recycled, and so on. The other thing that hasn't been mentioned yet is the impact of work from home. When we talk about reducing carbon footprint, let's stop spending an hour on the train or driving and just work from home. And you give back people a better quality of life. You give them back time. And frankly, you save a lot on the environment. So those are just some thoughts I had.
Thank you, Joe. We're going to go to Heather and then John. Heather, everybody has something to say today. It's great.
That's a great segue, Joe, from work from home, because the whole ways in which companies attract employees, retain employees, could be from a sustainability standpoint, knowing that they are donating, Bombas, for example, every one sock that you buy gets donated to a shelter. It's a way of engaging employees, which is another way of retaining them. And I think specifically, and more so now more than ever, is that's what the millennials are looking for, is people who, companies that really care about the environment and care about them as people, to keep them engaged. So when a company has a sustainability focus, it's one way of demonstrating that. I think the distinction that Sophia made between ESG and sustainability is absolutely critical. And knowing that any of those perspectives that are embedded in the business unit as opposed to separate and being looked like someone who stops what efforts are done elsewhere would be a win-win for any company.
Thank you, Heather. John, before we go to you, we've got a couple of really good comments here. Paul talks about his church takes donated computers, refurbishes them, sends them to women's shelters. Love that. And Srinivas talks about manufacturing, recycling the waste and hazardous material that emanates, such as red mud from aluminum. Wow, we're going deep in that one. John, what do you have for us before we start talking about data challenges?
Well, I guess what I was going to say is that really does tap what I was going to say does kind of directly hit the data challenges, which is if it's okay to go there. Like a lot of times people just, they have no really understanding of what they're consuming, and it goes across everything. Like, when it comes to, using resources, if something doesn't bubble it up so that people can see how much resources they're consuming, they probably just don't have visibility to it. Like if you somebody mentioned commuting, when I was in consulting, we used to fly a lot. Almost every week we'd fly somewhere and fly back. And one of the guys in the Seattle office, he created a calculator to really kind of like every time you logged into the portal, it would show you how many, basically how much carbon you were creating based off your trips for the year. When people are ordering cloud resources, they often, unless somebody tells them how much they're spending, they could be ordering racks of servers to build something, spinning up, and then forgetting to turn it off. And so much of the stuff is that people just, they don't have visibility to really what they're consuming, and they're doing things often without understanding the cost.
I agree with that, John. Let me bring Sophia back, and then we'll go to Derek and Heather after that. Joe, your hand is still raised. If you want to chime in, let me know. But Sophia, you introduced this topic as sustainability, fundamentally a data challenge. Mm-hmm. What did you mean by that? Because we didn't actually talk about that. And what are the easy opportunities for using data to drive sustainability goals?
Well, let's start with the problem statement. The problem statement isn't that a C-suite, a CIO, or a CTO doesn't want to consider risk or opportunity contextualized to sustainability. It's all boards' jobs to ask the question of what's coming around the corner that could hurt us or help us. The problem is that when a chief sustainability officer or a COO or a CPO raises or poses the question to them, they don't necessarily have the data available to create a convincing argument to those stakeholders. And I worry that this problem is going to be multiplied with agentic AI when all of those folks I just mentioned are then putting their database questions into an agent. So let's take the example of green steel. We have a really forward-looking, or actually it used to be forward-looking, now it's short-term looking steel company in the EU that saw they could command a premium and avoid a tax burden for steel made from renewable energy. They need to be able to show the margin improvement for that on a SKU level, like on a rod by rod level, and then decide where to export which rod based on how much embedded energy, i.e. carbon emissions, they could improve is in each rod. So in a world without data, you ask the margin agent, oh gee whiz, should I source from China or Germany? What's cheaper? Yeah, and the answer is going to be China. But if the margin agent understands carbon border adjustment mechanism tasks, tax understands the difference in your buyer between a Volkswagen and a BMW or one of the lower cost manufacturers you might be selling to, the agent's going to be able to tell you what you really should be doing is capturing which energy sources are used to make which SKUs at the product level, making sure you can bifurcate between those SKUs, audit, improve it, and sell green SKU to this supplier in this market and sell brown SKU to this supplier in this market. And you'd likely be able to command an X percent premium based on what I'm reading out of regulation. That would be a full data chain. Right now, it's like, oh, we should manufacture with renewable energy because we're sure there are customers out there who care.
Wow. So I remember sitting in the SAP conference and watching a dialogue around handling tariffs and all the different decisions that go into optimization. And so you're adding another variable here saying we can be more profitable and drive a sustainable product line. But it's really a data-driven exercise around supply chain and pricing. Is that what I'm hearing here?
Exactly. And let's go with tariffs.
Yeah.
Most organizations who don't use SAP Sustainability Footprint Manager to calculate product level carbon footprint still do it what I would call the early 2000s way of using estimates instead of ERP data actuals. And so estimates are spend-based. I spent $10 with supplier A and I spent $12 with supplier B. Okay. Here come tariffs. Now, all of a sudden, your cost for supplier A and B just went up by 10%. That's fine. Your COO explains it to your CFO as part of the cost of doing business. The board understands it as a macro trend and everyone moves on. Along comes your CPO and your COO. They need to report your total carbon emissions to Brussels or to an investor. Okay, they don't have their actuals based on the bill of material from their ERP system. So they take the dollar amount, now $11 and $13, depending on what country you're sourcing from, and they multiply it by their carbon emissions factor. They put it in a board deck. Boom, what happened? The carbon emissions you're showing to the board went up. Why? You did the right thing. You sourced renewable energy. You signed up for a carbon reduction goal. You found green products to sell at a premium. You switched your light bulbs to LED. Why the hell are your carbon emissions going up? Excuse my language, but this is what's happening in real time. Because you're using an estimate instead of an actual, and that estimate is a spend-based, and that spend now includes tariffs, which has nothing to do with carbon emissions.
Wow. So that's really impacting almost every company that's, you know, you're calling it using estimates. I'm going to call it spreadsheets probably in most situations.
Well, I'll close with the solution. The solution is pulling data from your ERP at the product level.
What do you think of that, Derek?
I think she's spot on. I mean, between with John, Martin, everybody, you can't really, the data challenge, if you can't see it, you can't measure it, you can't maintain it, you can't monitor it. These are all key things that come into how.
Did we lose Derek? Yeah, we lost Derek. Heather, you want to jump in?
Yes, thank you. I wanted to, I mean, what Sophia said was phenomenal, and I can't even other than say thank you. But the comment I wanted to make is in terms of visibility and in certain industries, I'm thinking of hospitality, where guests to a hotel have no clue as to what they're spending and they're doing.
And also so now, the confidentiality of all these things that are taking place across your ecosystem.
I muted him. I think he's got some kind of back.
Okay.
Go ahead, Heather.
Sorry. So just recapping in terms of visibility for in the guests at a hospitality organization, a hotel, resort, et cetera. And you can put your card into your key card into your room to put the air conditioning on and off. You can, if you took the shuttle, that you can use less emissions and less gas than if you were to drive your car. And some hotels are providing that information to give guests a choice. But without having that knowledge, how would anybody know? You can have a guesstimate or you can have an idea of what might be best, but that's an industry that is making that information more visible to the consumer.
Heather, when I see these things, what I'm always wondering is back to what you know, Sophia is saying is are there companies measuring the impact, right? Am I as a hotel guest or as a traveler making different decisions based on what information they're sharing and what's the overall impact of that looking like? I think that to me is really interesting in how they feed stories around that, how that ends up in their annual reports. And then like what other decisions does that lead to? Hi, Martin. We're talking about data challenges and turning them around into opportunities, it looks like.
Yeah, and I think the age-old comment, which I posted in the chat on LinkedIn, is you can't manage what you can't measure, which is if you, and this is kind of comes from the manufacturing world, but it's also true in every other thing as well. If you're not able to measure it, then how do you know it's changing? How do you know it's good or bad or anything else? So when you're looking at, you know, let's take the hotel room example, making your awareness of the amount of energy being consumed while maybe you're not in the room. But I'd also counter that is people should be given the option and the choice in terms of what they do. Yeah, I like quite a cool room in a hotel. And I find most hotel air conditioning systems tend to be a little weak, so you often have to leave it on when you're not in the room in order to get the temperature down to a manageable level. But you need that option, but you need to be shown the data so that you can actually make a good decision on based on all of the facts in front of you. And the same goes if you talk manufacturing, talk supply chain or whatever else. Yeah, do I need to rush that pallet of raw materials from China, Thailand, or whatever else by air? There's a real cost to that, and there's a real emissions, there's a real sustainability impact on that. Or could I bring it from there via a slower means, by a ship? Or can I actually purchase that from nearer to where I need it, as opposed to shipping it from a long way away? And what is the total cost of doing that? And how does that fit with my sustainability agenda? So I think you can look at these various things as data points and actually look at the total cost and total sustainability impacts.
Love it, Martin. Let's bring Liz. Liz, welcome to the floor today. Your thoughts on sustainability as a data challenge.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, great points. I love it. Anything that has to do with measuring results that actually brings it to the bottom line or the top line, that's I'm all about that. And I love what you were saying, Sophia, about, the differences you can make in terms of supply chain decisions that would actually impact, especially in manufacturing. My question is, what about there's so many of the industries that we work in that are information based, that really have nothing to do with manufacturing. I hate to say it, but how can we think about sustainability in those environments, in banking and financial services? Maybe you could shed some light on that, because I think that that's where we're chewing up, so much data and so many CPU cycles. And I would love to understand more about how we can mine the data, especially in the ERPs, to better get to good, solid, ground level metrics.
Liz, I think it's a great question. We're going to bring Sophia back in a couple seconds. I do want to take a very quick break before I go to John and Joe, and then we'll bring Derek back. But folks, you have joined the weekly Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We cover all kinds of topics interested by our digital and now AI leaders. Today, we're covering a very special, important topic on shaping tomorrow, sustainability as a data challenge. I want to thank Sophia for joining us from SAP. She is the Chief Sustainability and Commercial Officer at SAP. Thank you for joining us today. Next week on the 18th, we'll be talking from digital leaders to frontier firms, AI and governance strategies. And then on the 25th, we'll be talking about agentic versus AI agents, large versus small LLM. So do put those on your calendar and remember the URL starcio.com/coffee/next-event. John, you're next up. And I think that was a softball for you, honestly. We're talking about information companies, there's some low hanging fruit with cloud and spinning up and spinning down environments and using your cloud tools to look at carbon emissions. They're all doing a pretty good job of that. Do you have an answer for Liz around what information companies should be doing differently?
Yeah, I do. And I was going to say, with the data, a lot of times some awareness and some education out to people can really kind of amplify the stuff out there, because there's when it comes to data, there's so many people that just have the mindset like, well, we don't know what reports we're going to run, we don't have the time to figure out that, so let's just record everything we can. And what almost always happens is that people, they try to just data hoard as much as they can, and they haven't started with what they want to do with the data. They don't really have a data strategy or an approach to this, and kind of like an organized approach to this. And so what they end up doing is often they data hoard as much as they can, but they still often aren't capturing the data that they really need. And so that when later on, when they go to use the data, they don't have the data they need. They have a bunch of data that they actually don't need, which costs a lot of money. It creates a huge surface area that data could have sensitive information in it, which is a security risk. And so it's so much better for everyone if we can try to figure out what we want to do with the data, what problems we want to solve, what things we want to improve, and back into that, like what data we actually need, and then have a really good strategy about how we deal with data across the organization and solve problems for everyone, not just for like specific people or specific orgs, and go from there. And that way we can be really conscious about what data we solve, what data we save, what data we analyze, and not have 90% of the data collected and never used.
I think we're going to do this. John and Liz is have another coffee hour about keeping the data that matters, and strategies around that, because it's come up a couple times. I mean, I think the security angle is interesting around it, the sustainability and cost angles around it, but just like really the conversation about being strategic about what you're capturing rather than just, leaving it up for the engineers to just decide, hey, we're going to just keep data, or the conversation around duplicate data sources. That happens a lot in financial services. I think, Liz, you know that we have like five data sources all giving us basically the same data. There's a cost to that.
Agreed. Agreed. The other part, the flip side of that is if you don't capture lots of extra data, you actually might miss something in terms of, anomalies or, indicator signals in the market. So there's a lot to talk about there.
Yes, we're going to put it up on the charter for an upcoming session. Hey, Joe, welcome back.
So one of the companies I worked for was a service company and collected data and published, when it was very much in vogue, a sustainability report, an annual sustainability report, in addition to the usual annual report. And a lot of companies still do this. It's no longer ESG branded, but sustainability reports can go a long way toward enhancing your brand image and letting your customers know that you care about the environment and tell them in factual terms exactly what it is that you're doing on an annual basis and what impact you've had on sustainability.
Yeah, Jay is chiming in here on the comments. Regulatory bodies, investors, and consumers regularly demand transparent sustainability reporting. Look, we didn't cover a lot of this. We were all going into the cost side of the win-win. I'm with Heather. I think it's more of a brand play. I think it's a hiring play. I think it's giving people motivation about the storyline behind your company and why they want to work there or why you want to do business with those companies. So I think
Or
there's much more than a commercial play here.
why you want to buy their products, right? I mean,
Exactly.
we put a lot of effort, another company I worked for put a lot of effort into QR codes on the product, on the actual physical product that gave you the lineage of that product, where all of the ingredients came from.
Perfect. Derek, come on back, and then we're going to go to our next question around AI and IoT. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, so sorry, I got cut off earlier, but yeah, just looking at the quality of the data, the security of the data. I mean, that the sustainment of the data is going to be critical from that point of view. And when you look at the monitoring, as everybody's mentioned earlier, to be able to maintain what you can see is going to be critical. So those sensors that you put out there, the smart metering, working with automated reports you're talking about, that's really going to help with the disclosures as far as how can you make sure we're sustaining this in the fashion that should be, but also could be compliant is going to be key.
Very cool. So let's just jump back in. Ashish on the comment stream is talking about some of the products he's seen his clients use, SAP Analytics Cloud, the Sustainability Control Tower, the Sustainability Footprint Manager. I'm getting a lot of good plugs here, Sophia, for things that you've built into the product around this. I want to just jump into AI and IoT, and I kind of want to apply this from the perspective of, AI is going and is driving a lot of energy consumption. I don't want to throw the numbers out there in terms of what it cost from an energy perspective or a cost model perspective to train these super large language models that we're all consuming. And I want to flip the equation and start saying, how are we using these technologies, not just toward competitive advantage, but actually helping us meet sustainability goals and objectives. So I was hoping, Sophia, you had some stories around this.
Sure, absolutely. So, big picture, AI plus sustainability is a classic ROI equation. The cost is how much energy are we drawing, i.e., embedded emissions, unwanted pollution from using AI, versus how much benefit towards true system structural change are we getting from it? The energy we need to run LLMs is the input. The output is how much better we get at designing R&D materials, how much better we get at quickly synthesizing carbon emissions and shifting around our supply chain, how much better we get at predicting physical climate risk and how local communities should prepare for that and could be impacted by it, how much better we get at improving the grid and bringing on reliable renewable energy that the grid can absorb using AI. That's the return on our investment. Big picture, the good news is we are through the initial wave of headlines of how much energy this is going to take. And now on to the efficiency conversation, the amount of energy per token, per inquiry that is needed to drive an outcome is going down. We also know, and we don't know, we can see, we can feel in our pockets, in our wallets, we can look at investors, that the cost of generating energy through renewable sources or low carbon sources is dramatically, dramatically decreasing. And multiple charts you can pull on that specifically for wind and solar. For this team, the most interesting question is, where should we be applying AI first for the sake of sustainability? And this is what's happening right now. The AI software dollars, the AI budget is being lined up to be unlocked through process efficiency, through things like sourcing and HR. That's good. And as a sustainability representative, I want to make sure the chief sustainability officer also has their hand up and in a line for that spend and say, hey, of all the lofty objectives we've talked about and started at, you know, at listing at the top of this call, we need AI use cases in R&D on chemicals, on materials, and then we can apply that AI to show the real world improvement or lack thereof very, very quickly. So let's take the prior recycled paper example. On its surface, recycled paper may, I don't know per se, per SKU, but let's take it as granted for some, require more energy, more embedded carbon than using virgin. However, it is propping up a larger circular economy that we want to enable for all materials, because there's just not enough trees to keep up with the paper and cardboard demand we need. Part of the blocker to enabling that circular economy, reusing that paper more, and then reducing those emissions is matching the producer and the buyer, matching the buyer and the supplier in a secondhand market, because it would be like trying to find a needle in a haystack. With AI and a use case to do that in a secondhand market, you can very, very quickly match up what producer needs, what specific weight, width, quantity, quality, and location of a secondhand material with a supplier, and use AI to unlock a much larger circular economy conversation.
It's very interesting. You know, I did an article for CIO, I think it was about 2-3 months ago, and I warned CIOs. And I said, if you are lining up your AI initiatives for only productivity improvements, you know, 6 to 12 months from now, you're going to be asked by your CFO to go cut people, because that's where productivity improvements lie. You know, these AIs are expensive. They're going to get even more expensive. And I've never seen transformation results come from just focusing on cost savings. And focusing on productivity, you must have a bigger story to tell here, a bigger set of objectives to go after, other than just getting more efficient in what you're doing or slightly more capable in doing things that you're doing today. You know, doing today's business a little bit better is not transformational. And so I reminded CIOs around that. I have Martin, Derek, and Joe raising your hands. I'm putting the challenge to you guys. You know, Sophia's saying we should be applying AI to plus sustainability in the ROI equation. I don't think that's happening in boardrooms. I'm wondering if you have a recipe on how you challenge that. Go ahead, Martin.
Well, I think first of all, let's kind of get a bit more specific. A specific example use of AI and IoT in the manufacturing space. Yeah, I'll go back to manufacturing. If you've got a production line that is running that is providing numerous amounts of data, some of those data points can be the amount of energy consumed versus the amount of product produced, just simplifying it right down. And you solve AI to actually understand that data and identify what's a kind of an ultimate way of configuring things for the best productivity for the least energy consumption. That is a business data set of decisions. So use of AI in that space to identify the golden batch if it's a particular type of product like that or whatever it is both economically and sustainably the best way to go. So there is a real, very strong business case for doing that. The trouble is, manufacturing has a habit of lagging behind a lot of industries in actually use of good tools like that. So it's unfortunately an area where there is a potential massive amount of opportunity, but the mindset of manufacturers doesn't always go there. And they try to kind of not invest in in latest technology and other things like this. So there is a total contradiction there. So that is kind of something I throw out there as a situation that occurs. In the boardroom, it is that conversation around this makes economic sense, it makes reputational sense, this investment will, result in bottom line dollars, it will result in good PR, it will result in brand enhancement, etc. So those are the kind of conversations that you need to be having. So relating what's happening physically in the operational side to what the boardroom is looking at.
I love that example, and I love that direction around the board. Let's bring Derek in. Derek, your thoughts on AI, and how do we get the board interested in AI as a sustainability ROI equation? It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I agree with Martin talking about, the board discussion, because I don't see it happening enough at the board discussion. I had two recent customers I was working with, and they were looking at how they could use AI and IoT in the hospitality or restaurant space. And one of the challenges was, how can I do these tools to help me do predictive analysis of maintenance before, like a freezer going bad or a refrigerator going bad or something of that nature that's going to help protect my business to help make sure my business doesn't go down. Another model they were looking at was using IoT devices to check for the calibration of equipment used in the medical space. And that was looking at artificial intelligence and sensors using RTLS, which is real-time location sensors, to say if I've got 100 different devices that need to be calibrated to make sure I have good quality of care to monitor what's taking place with these patients, can I do that effectively or is something going to be missed? And the challenge they've had, some have been missed in the past, and looking at artificial intelligence and IoT type sensory technology to help them do this is going to help them identify those things that need to be done quicker. It's going to help them maintain that reliability and the quality control that they have on their system, but it's also going to help to increase greater efficiencies to make sure they're getting the quality of care for the healthcare space and then for the restaurant space, making sure they don't have any downtime when it comes to sustaining their business. And I think in looking at it from those particular entities, looking at energy management, you're looking at anomaly detection based on things that may go awry or go sideways. These are kind of things that I don't think are not bubbling up fast enough to the boardroom discussion where it becomes more relevant, where people really need to act on it sooner rather than later.
Derek, what you're making me think of is my car, right? And we've
Yes.
got all the warning lights in the car, and they're giving me my miles
Absolutely.
per gallon, but there's no warning light saying you're off baseline, right? Your
Yes.
energy, and that there's a cost equation there, and a carbon equation there, and that talk about potentially changing behaviors if you just alert people around this. Hi, Joe.
Well, it does give you an MPG indication, right? So there's some
Yeah, but
indication.
then I have to think. That's the
Yeah.
whole point. I have to realize, oh, it's normally at 32 and now it's at 27. I wonder why is that? Maybe I should go change the oil or fill up my tires a little bit more or something like that.
No, good point. Good point. Hey, I was thinking back to a couple of things when I was involved in the HVAC industry, the service industry. Even then, and this is going back a number of years, we were using machine learning to predict, as Derek just alluded to, when a machine's going to fail, how do we optimize the performance and the life of air handling equipment. Today, you have very intelligent buildings that are making decisions about power purchase, temperature control, lights. And there's nobody in the room, turn the lights off. Somebody comes in the room, turn the lights on, right? And you have that going on. And there are some very advanced AI companies. One particular my investment group put money into looks at the cost of power and controls the HVAC equipment in large buildings by diminishing the power consumption when the power rates go up because demand goes up, but not at the expense of comfort. So it balances the temperature in the rooms that are occupied versus the cost of keeping them at a moderate temperature based on the rates. So there are a lot of examples of where you can show a very definite, very concrete ROI for investing in these kinds of technologies. And those conversations happen every day in those industries.
You know, Joe, I used to do the analysis when I was at McGraw-Hill as part of the team, and we'd look at different types of buildings like stadiums, office buildings, and things like that, and start saying, you know, under which conditions is it economically smart to rebuild from scratch, take the building down, rebuild it. And in the last 10, 15 years, there's certainly been a lot of cost equations around it. But then when so for example, I think about Yankee Stadium just down the blocks from us, and build a better user experience, and you're going to have people spending more money on concessions and seating, maybe, right? That's the economic analysis. But then you start looking at these zero energy buildings and zero energy data centers. And to me, that's the ROI that becomes an analysis that I think more companies need to have at their fingertips. It's like, when is the legacy system costing you more than in several different areas, and there's better opportunities from you j beyond just a cost or even a revenue perspective?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on. Let's build a data center in an environment, whether it's near chilled water or it's in a chilled environment, and just reduce our overall, I mean, replace our existing facilities with ones that are going to operate much, much more efficiently and more cost effectively.
Yeah, you're getting a shout out here from Srinivas, also says use AI to dynamically adjust HVAC, lighting, and production schedules. Geez, my thermostat doesn't even do that well today. I have to manually go set it. And some of this is easy stuff. Sophia, I want to bring you back. We're down to our last couple minutes. I'm looking for your last sound bites, simple advice. We have a group here, pretty good audience today, mostly of leaders, part technology leaders. But there's a couple people from the finance departments that are here, a number of consultants that are working here. Martin coined this off very, very, we were talking about this before we joined, and we said some of the things that we're trying to do with data and sustainability feels a couple steps out of reach for the average person, like they can't make a difference. And then some of the things are just like minor things that we can do. Like, we can turn the lights off, we can, be smarter in our hotel rooms, we can donate a couple dollars when we take a flight out for carbon. I mean, those are the very tiny things that we're doing. What are the things in the middle, the ones that the leaders of our organization should be doing, even though it might feel like they're not, they're a couple steps removed from the decisions?
Thinking about sustainability is exactly like thinking about the shift from management to leadership. We are no longer trying to do for ourselves. We are no longer trying to immediately reduce our personal impact. We are trying to shift the board-level conversation to learn the lessons and concepts that I and everyone else here shared, that there is a systemic change to be made when we talk about sustainability, and that we're not asking a C-suite member or a board member to quote-unquote care. Side note, I sometimes say, whoever uses the word quote care first in a board meeting loses. We are asking them to consider that as they look around the corner at risks and opportunities, inherent in the answer to those questions is the assumption that we operate our supply chains and our businesses in a stable economy and a world plentiful in natural resources, and that the signal is showing that neither of those things are true anymore.
Wow. I'm going to throw this back very quickly to Martin and Joe. Are we ready to tell that story? Because that's kind of like a mic dropping statement if you're making it at a board meeting. Martin, how do you feel about that?
I think Sophia is got a brilliant point there. Yeah, it's a case of just I'm not going to say anymore. I think Sophia, you've kind of mic drop for the end of the discussion. I think that sums it up nicely.
Yeah, Sophia, I might ask you for that soundbite for a quote, because I think it's just something that, the assumption I made is that the people listening here may not be able to make a difference. And the answer you're saying really is we can make a difference. Voices go up to our leadership, to our board members, and that's the small changes that we have to make in our organization. That's been happening across 20 years of transformation change, whether we're talking about user experience or AI or IoT, how our business models have to evolve. And now we need to take it on our shoulders and look at the big picture around how the world is changing. And if we're not about contributing in a positive way about how we're using resources and how we're partnering around our supply chains and what types of products we're choosing to build, the assumptions around how our economies are running is going to continue to erode. What a strong message to end with, Sophia. Thank you for joining. I hope you'll come and join us again in a few more months. We'll pick another topic to cover around this important area. Thank you for being with us, Sophia. Folks, thank you for joining this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We will be back next week. I do have another special guest joining us next week, and we'll be talking about from digital leader to frontier firm, AI and governance strategies. This is going to be about, again, that sort of how do we do the right thing, the right way conversation, but aiming for some bigger objectives around AI. So I do plan on being here next week for that important conversation around changing your leadership style and helping your organization become a frontier firm. And then the 25th is a topic around agentic versus AI agents, large versus small LLMs. Joanne introduced that topic for us, and we'll be covering how to differentiate between these capabilities and use the right language and think about short and longer term objectives. So folks, thank you for joining this week. It's been a wonderful conversation. This will be available on demand on LinkedIn and on the Digital Trailblazer community. And do remember starcio.com/coffee/next-event to join us to our next event. Everybody have a great weekend and keep sustainability in mind as you make your decisions.